So here we list some of the points that are typically negotiated in a force majeure provision. The owner, of course, wants a very narrow list of force majeure events. They want the contractor to demonstrate actual delay as a result of the force majeure event, and they want the contractor to take efforts to overcome the force majeure event. The contractor, on the other hand, wants a broad list of events that act more as examples, but are not limiting in any way. The contractor also doesn't want to have to prove the listed events were unforeseeable or out of its control. It just wants a presumption that if you see, for example, COVID listed, it counts automatically as a force majeure event. Notice we already talked a bit about, and then when it comes to rights, traditionally, as I sort of referenced earlier, the contractor's remedy pursuant to a force majeure event is for schedule relief only. However, because of COVID-19 and the unknown impacts that we're still sort of learning every day, contractors are asking for cost relief as well. And we'll go to the next slide and I believe hand it back to you, Kyle.
Yeah, so Samir hinted at this in his description of owner versus contractor preferred terms, but like most contract law, force majeure provisions and their interpretation are a creature of state law. And unfortunately for those of us who practice in this space, this is not something that the UCC attempted to standardize. So we are left with looking at common law judicial decisions in an attempt to find guidance as to how these clauses are interpreted. And obviously each state has its own case law. Now, a quick practice point for those of you who dabble in construction contracts, many states have so-called home court rules that require construction contracts for projects being built within that state to be governed by local state law, regardless of what you put in your choice of law clause. So while, as we are about to get into, you might want New York's doctrine to apply, you can't self-select that because of statutory rules in that state. So before you get into any construction project in a state that you're unfamiliar with, I would recommend consulting a local council and getting guidance that way. But at minimum, you should evaluate whether you can select New York or Delaware or any kind of M&A state law that you might typically use, or whether you're going to be forced to use local law. So when you're looking into a state's precedent on force majeure, I think the single most important question to answer relates to how catch-all provisions that Samir was describing are interpreted. The catch-all provision meaning the clause at the start or the end of the force majeure clause that essentially says, or any other event that's outside the reasonable control of the parties and not foreseeable. There is a doctrine that many states follow called adjustum generis. I am not a native speaker of Latin, so please forgive me if I've mispronounced that. I didn't take it in high school either. So, adjustum generis, despite the fancy name, is a relatively simple concept. It means that the catch-all provision will not be interpreted broadly. It will be interpreted such that it only applies to events that are very similar to the events specifically listed in the force majeure clause. So, for example, if your clause lists hurricane and something is a tropical storm that has an effect, it's a different kind of named storm, you have an argument to have it covered. But if it does not include severe weather of any kind, you'd be arguing something entirely differently, and you'd be in rough shape. So importantly, for those states that don't have home court rules, many of you may pick New York law as your choice of law. New York follows this doctrine. So if New York law governs your contract, the application of your catch-all provision is not going to be very broad. If you're the owner, maybe that feels great to you. If you're the contractor, that's an important thing to know. And there's another very interesting point here. There's an unpublished Delaware case that we were able to find that declined to apply the doctrine of adjustum generis to a specific force majeure clause. And the court held in that case that the wording of the clause at issue was sufficient to overcome the presumption of a justum generis and broaden the catch-all provision to be treated like a true catch-all provision. So that's very interesting. So watch out if that unpublished decision ends up holding precedential value in Delaware, and you're typically an M&A lawyer who uses Delaware law for all your contracts, force majeure provisions might be broader in Delaware, although that remains to be seen. So the obvious question to consider if your state follows a justum generis is to look at the events that are specifically listed in your force majeure clause and evaluate whether COVID fits neatly into any of the listed words.